the office and get told that we just lost a £750,000 job at IKEA. At the time I had a Ferrari and my car had probably a Porsche, but I was starting to fall back into this really bad, dark place. And that's when my wife said to me, "Where have you been?" And I said, "I had to go upstairs. Someone told me that, you know, take your life away."
Hello, I'm Roger Bradbury, owner of Wren Construction and Chime Software.
And I'm Ellie Elworthy, once a teacher but took a turn into construction 9 years ago. And welcome to our new podcast, Wallplug and Grommet, where each week we're going to chew the fat on what we've been doing, what's going down in the world of construction, and interview an industry expert to see what useful advice they can throw our way.
So, Bells, how was it 5-year-old birthday party you were off to last time we spoke?
Yeah, it was great. Well, surprisingly great for a 5-year-old birthday party, actually. My friends, the parents, have converted their paddling pool into a hot tub.
Oh, very nice.
So they fill it up They fill it up from the kitchen sink with hot water, put in a few Epsom salts, and the adults all get in and have a wine. So actually, it turned out to be quite a nice party.
Bit of a rave by the sounds of it.
Did you get back in time for bedtime?
Yep, I got back in time for bedtime. At the moment, I'm trying to miss bath time, but I'm just getting back in time for story. So,
perfect.
So it was a.
What are you reading?
It was a David Walliams book, Bad Dad. Honestly, at first I thought, oh, he's just trying to be real dull. But to be fair, reading this book at the moment in stitches quite a lot of the time. So really,
anyone out there with young children,
you probably already know this. He's got so many books already, but David Walliams is funny for young and old alike. Someone might be listening to this in 30 years' time thinking, what are these two on about?
Bored silly.
It could be a history programme.
I wouldn't want them getting their history from us.
Across the country, Bells. So what's happening on the pod today? What is happening on the pod
today? So we've got Bernie in. Do you want to talk? I've not met Bernie.
I've known Bernie since I was, I think the first job I did with Bernie Wilkes was 2000. It was a big Sainsbury's Saver Centre in London Colney. And the one memory I always have of Bernie is he was like a bit of a, you know, a bit, it was a big character, knew what he was doing, was obviously a very competent businessman. And we used to have these gigs that were called partnering meetings, and we'd take a hotel for at least one night, and we'd have meetings during the day where people had to stand up and tell everybody something about them that nobody knew. You can imagine the sort of thing.
Yeah,
so cringe. Anyway, we're all heading to this one hotel, and the client turned up, and he'd got himself a new car, and it was like a Peugeot coupe, and he was so proud of his new car, and everyone was saying, "Oh, really nice car, client, you know, you must be pleased yourself." And then all you could hear is and into the car park pulls a red Ferrari.
Oh god. Hello, Bernie.
And it's Bernie Wilkes.
We are so excited to have this week's guest on. He started out in 1980 as a plumber's apprentice in London before rising up the ranks to run and sell a multi-million pound contracting business, Advanced Interiors. After some years out, he went on to buy the oldest construction business in England, George Jackson. And if this wasn't enough, in 2008, he set up another business, CWM Squared, with his brother, before selling it in 2019. Bernie, we've got a lot to talk about. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, morning, guys, morning.
Great to see you, mate. I see you rolled up into the car park in what could only be described as military-grade vehicle. What's that all about?
Well, living in the country now, gone on the Ferraris and the Bentleys now. I've got this really old new Land Rover Defender.
Yeah. Some funny colour that was. It looks like a sort of...
Yeah, it's a showstopper, but you have to be a farmer to stop and have a look at it.
So you started out as a plumber's apprentice, Bernie. How old were you and how did you get into the trade?
I went to an all-boys school, Abbotsfield in Hillingdon, where I did bricklaying for 3 years, which hoping to become a bricklayer. And unfortunately, in 1980, when I left school, there was a little bit of a recession. There was no bricklaying jobs, so I decided to have a go at plumbing. So, I went off and had a... in them days, sitting guilds test to see what levels you're at. Yeah. And luckily for me, a lovely little story that I bumped into a very close friend of mine. It was a lot cleverer than me on the tube. And I sat next to him on the tube, and then I decided to sit next to him in the exam. And watched over, looked at his answers, and
So what was that for? Copied him. For the brickie or the...
No, this was to become the plumber.
Oh, okay. Plumbing.
There was like 50 youngsters in this sort of room, and I think the top six would have had the plumbing job.
So you cheated your way to the top.
I've done it all my life. So that's how I started out. Probably that's how I finished cheating. But I was quite surprised how many, people there was there.
Yeah.
All in sort of school leavers. But to get a letter through the post to say, you've come, got this job with Carl Stewart, Lakers Mechanical Services, was an achievement for me.
And then you moved from plumbing into ceiling fixing. Yeah. How did that come about?
I really enjoy plumbing.
Crap plumber.
Yeah, no, I was quite proud of it. I still look at work now when I go in the toilet. But I knew that it was something I was enjoying, but it was something that I needed to achieve more in my life, because my foreman and my site managers wasn't showing what I really wanted to achieve. They had rusty vans, their houses was probably a little bit smaller. And my brother used to be picked up with many, many of his bosses in four Granadas, big cars like Sweeney, caravans on the back.
So you're after the money.
Yeah. So I made the decision, but my dad said, finish your time out as a plumber and then you can always fall back on it. And then I decided to change in 2007.
No.
Yeah, no, 1987.
Yeah.
I mean, I should remember that because I changed from being on the cards to self-employed.
Right.
3 weeks before getting married. So
how old would you been back then?
21.
Okay.
Probably, yeah, 21, yeah.
So from there, Bernie, how did you go about setting up your first company, Advanced Interiors?
It was quite easy. be honest, my brother set the ideas out in the many early days when he was the boss, he was the foreman, we knew that. And he used to come up with these ideas that we should be something a little bit better than most teams of people. He wanted to join forces with another large gang, which I didn't want to do. And the idea then was we was going to go out and buy our own plant so we can sort of sell ourselves to have a good gang with all the equipment you need, even probably down to scaffolds. And it was being talked about for a little while, and we finally probably got to a place where we thought we could move on, but being brothers we started to fall out a little bit.
Right.
And one day in the AA building in Leicester Square, I fell out with my brother that he picked up his tools and off he went. We were always brothers. We loved each other, but we always falling out.
Yeah.
Is he older brother?
Yes, older brother.
So what, even
years.
When you were young, you were always...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, scrapping. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One day, it was through a family argument, and literally I just looked out the window, saw him walking down the road, and I thought, this is it now. I've either got to sort this out or it's all going to fall apart.
Yeah. And so then you decided...
Well, I looked around because the last words was to the team, who do you want to go with?
Right.
And no one went with Mick.
Right.
They all stay with me. And I don't think it was because of Mick being anything but a better fixer. They knew that what this row was over at this personal time was I was in the right.
So you were around about the direction of the business and what you were going to do and how you were going to do it. And they sort of saw
there was
vision.
About 12 of us then on the site that day, and they all just said, look, we stick together, we finish the job and we see where it goes from there.
And at that stage, who were you guys working for?
A company called Barrett Ceilings. They come from over Wokingham.
So you were a subbies to a contractor. Yeah. You were a labour-only subcontractor.
And the AA job was quite a big job. It was probably 8, 12 floors or something in that region. I think we all know where that is. And it's having to fit out. So we moved on from then. And then Mick went down to live with his girlfriend down in Somerset, which left a bigger window for me because it wasn't like he was going to tread on, come
and
back.
You weren't
and
nicking
tread
each
on,
other's work.
Correct,
or
yeah. So we moved on, and we just started to get bigger works. We had the tools, because I went out and literally done this, bought, put some money in the business. Yeah, bought the gear. It was working. And then we literally was, you know, getting far bigger jobs. The gangs were growing. And in them days, of course, we didn't have mobile phones. Everything was done when you got home at night.
Of course, yeah.
Sat in the office many, many hours till midnight, talking to people, what we got to do next day. And so them days were quite tough.
And you were just learning on the hoof, really, how to run a business.
Yeah, well, literally running on the hoof, you know, from even... My biggest support was then when my wife came in.
Yeah.
She had an accountancy background.
Right.
So always all I had to worry about was getting to the job.
The lads.
Working, doing it and bringing it home. And then the money situation, paying the boys, taxes, invoices.
And generally just the dealing with the customers, the agreeing the figures, pricing the work, applying for the money, then dealing with cash flow issues. She helped you with...
Absolutely. Yeah, did it all, Roger. One of my stories now, and you might laugh at this, you've always said throw a few things. I've never read a bank statement from when I was probably married.
Too many noughts on the end of it now.
Never, ever opened one up, Rog.
No, is that right? Never, yeah, really?
Never looked one.
So even now with a household, really?
Yeah, I don't know where things are. Yeah, because I just feel it's always been in good hands from the first day.
Yeah.
And why worry about it?
How nice.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
When was it established?
1997 to 2007, 10 years.
Yeah.
I was told that it was always a good year to sell a business.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's what they were saying.
That was just before the financial crash, I suppose. That might be something.
It was a good time to sell it, but when you sold it, it wasn't a good time to have the money. So it was
right,
a bit of, you know, my money wasn't working and things like it should have done before.
Yeah, so how did that come about then, the sale? Is that something you want to
Well,
talk
everybody was convinced that you couldn't sell plasterboard.
Yeah.
Company. I did. I went on a golf trip to France with Barclays Bank.
Right.
And I was pointed in the right direction with this guy that they sent over there that basically works with selling businesses.
Yeah.
And from there onwards, we put a plan together. From that day to 6 months, we sold the business.
Is that right? So you decided, I think I'm going to sell this business. You spoke to your bank.
Yeah.
And they said, actually, Bernie, you know, contrary to what some people say, there are people that will buy a contracting business. And then within 6 months, it was sold.
And how did you feel about that? You know,
I felt very proud. Yeah, I held my head high. But after a little while, after the 3 years that I stayed in with Advanced Interiors, dropping down from an owner to a managing director, which was very tough.
So that's after you sold it, you really kept it.
They asked me to. They asked me to stay on for 18 months. Sorry, 18 months, and then I set up a new little division in London for them. Went up there, worked quite hard, but only 4 days of the week. I started to realise something was taken away from me a little bit. You know, it's just I've gone from this really proud person to now being just a normal sort of person. Yeah, forget money parked in the bank. You know, I was. It was
your baby, and someone else was looking after your baby.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And now I've got someone to report to.
Our last guest we had last week was in exactly the same position.
Yeah.
He sold his company, was working within the company and didn't feel comfortable with it.
I think, if I remember rightly, I don't think I did the 18 months. I think I did a year. And then we come to an agreement and I left.
So at that time, roughly, Advanced Interiors, what sort of turnover was it?
Well, it was probably striking about 10 million at the time.
And so how many guys?
100 on site, probably 15 to 20 in the office.
Yeah.
But we was hitting some big profit numbers.
I could tell by the cars that you used to drive.
we used to. I wouldn't like to say, but we was probably hitting 35-40%.
Was that a gross margin? And then you're making 20s on the bottom of that or something.
Yeah,
it's not that. That's not
probably,
like that now.
That's probably going to queue a few people up after this.
Well, it's done, isn't it? It's
not. Yeah, I think it's easy to say that now.
Begging poverty all your life. Then, I mean, one of the jobs I was working for. It was over the airport, Pier 6. Big job for us, new people over the airport. I had a friend, you know, Kelly Overall. Working.
Oh, yeah, Kelly, yeah.
And a good lad. And for 18 months, he honestly felt that we was just making a few quid.
Right, yeah.
And then it turned into just under a £2 million job, and I think we made in the 40% profit margin.
And he's never looked at a bank statement.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So,
Oh, fair play, man.
One of the things I found very, very difficult was you can't just turn up in your office with a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You you don't turn up in the your office with a Ferrari. You have to keep it away from the office. And when they started to see things changing in my life, I always had a little story to tell them of how I got to this level.
Maybe did you feel a bit
guilty?
Or
yeah, I did. I probably did. I did. I mean, there were so many of them all started out at my level.
Yeah.
Especially the lads on site that I offered this chance to come on board with me that were really part of my gang.
Yeah.
Seeing now that, you know, I've gone from, you know, to a large size house, holidays were abroad now and things like this. It was not easy.
And what do you think made you different from the others? Like, what was that drive in you?
My drive was, I remember sometimes just driving down the road, coming home at night and then telling myself how proud my mates at school would be of me, and my teachers had told me that, you know, you're not really, you know, I went to a school that was, it wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the grammar school or nothing. You were there to serve for just the 5 years to get you out the other end, and it was an all-boys school. It was a very rough school that you could go and fight.
Where was that? West London, was it, you said earlier? Was it Hillingdon?
Yeah. And it, you know, to come out there and you just see and you're proud of what you've got already.
Yeah.
You know, it made me.
So you just wanted to do well.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And you knew you had
and
it.
And once you get a little bit of it, Roger, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, you can only better yourself. But it has its downfalls. I went to, when on a beautiful holiday to Sorrento, jumped in the pool with my kids, played with them, come out. I said to them, just got to make a phone call. I made a phone call to the office and get told that we've just lost a £750,000 job at IKEA.
Yeah.
Now you got to get back in the pool, play with the kids.
Pretend.
Yeah, you got out.
Yeah.
And they were difficult times as well.
Yeah.
You know, just things like that. So it wasn't all glossy. It wasn't all shiny.
No, so, it's not. No,
So, you know, you had to protect yourself. I never tried to show my children what I was doing or in my different lights. You know, I hope they look back and say, well, you can ask him now, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just for the listeners, Ryan, Bernie's son, works at Wren as a sort of he's our fit out contracts manager. Great lad.
Yeah. So you know, hopefully he could tell his story and not know Dad was upset jumping back in the pool.
You sold and left Advanced Interiors. And then what did you do? Because I know you bought another business. What was the timing?
Basically, I had 3 years out, three beautiful years where we was having some beautiful holidays.
Yeah.
We went South Africa, South America, Australia's beautiful, but it was running out where I could go. I like
the world's only so big.
I can tell you some stories about meeting people on there, but I won't go there. There was something, Roger, that was going wrong, and I spoke to you about this morning, and I've got everything I could achieve. This time I had a Ferrari on my car, I had probably a Porsche.
Yeah.
But I was starting to fall back into this really bad, dark place, and I don't know why. I woke up in the morning, and it wasn't the same feeling. I used to get out of bed in the mornings, jump off, go to work, you come home buzzing around with your mates. And I fell back into this dark place where I believed I had cancer. I was getting stomach pains, and it went on for probably a good year, and I was even getting things in my head to say call it a day. And that's when my wife said to me, where have you been? And I said, I had to go upstairs. Someone told me that, you know, take your life away.
Oh God.
Up until that year, I didn't even believe there's these people that suffer with these
depression, basically,
and today they're more honest with themselves, they're talking about it. I took my children to a Capital Radio Jingle Bell Ball. We had second row tickets. They were smiling all night, cheerful, and it was one of my lowest times of my life.
Oh God.
You know, I couldn't focus on all the Oriannas and all that was singing.
All the lovely things. You were just in a horrible place.
I was just in this horrible, dark place, yeah. So we eventually got some help.
Yeah.
And the therapy, I started to go on some
medication. And that helped, did it? The therapy Was it one-on-one type stuff?
Yeah, it was one-on-one, and it got so bad that they basically described that my stomach was so like a spring caught up that when I sold the business, it uncoiled. And, you know, I had to learn to breathe again. And I was told that probably if I was in my later years, I probably would have died from it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah,
so and just that the was stress and...
Stress. But stress that I would deal with every day, be happy with it, not knowing it was going on.
Right.
And as soon as you've got time on your own, you start thinking and worrying, what's that pain, what's this?
Yeah.
And it just brings you down. So I got the all clear. I wasted a lot of NHS sort of time and money. Yeah.
No, not a waste.
And then the doctor just sat me down and said, you know, Mr. Wilkes, seems like you need to go back to work.
Is that really what they said?
Yeah.
So how old were you at this?
Probably then it was about 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, 2010.
So 3 years after you sold the firm in 2007.
So mid-30s. So or mid-40s.
About 43 then.
Okay.
43, yeah.
Same age as me now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm grateful that I'm out of those days now.
Oh, for sure.
Grandchildren again. And I feel I'm at the right time. I don't feel I'm missing anything at the moment. Not many people know this, but... At this time, I had a house in south of France. And sometimes I used to drive down there. And it got to the stage I couldn't drive any further. When I was driving along the motorways, I was getting this tunnel vision and I was literally shaking.
So it's really manifesting itself.
I went embarrassingly to the doctors and said, I've got this thing I'm struggling with. And he actually called it driving phobia.
Right.
I looked at him as to say, well, thank goodness you know what it is, because I'm thinking I'm going mad. And he said he has people that come to his practice who don't drive on the motorway because they have this, and it's all to do with this depression and, you know, this blackness, this tunnel vision that you're seeing yourself in. And I
so did you get find yourself like just seeing bad things happening, or was it more just not being able to see good?
Not just seeing good.
Yeah. So everything was...
Yeah.
Like with the black dog, don't they?
Yeah. Got the best family ever, you know, never rowed. It was just perfect. And but I've always wanted more. And I'm not saying that's just money.
Yeah.
But I've always wanted more to see my brother do well and better in life. If he had a problem, I'd worry about that for him.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody had a problem in the family, it was me that would worry about it more. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So you took on everyone else's weight, your own weight, and didn't realise that it was evident.
Yeah.
If it was to come back again, do you feel like you're stronger now to deal with it?
My wife worries about me sometimes.
Yeah.
If she can see sometimes I'm a bit low, she calls it a low day, and then we try extra hard the next day. And one of my lovely times now is spending time with my Alsatian German Shepherd dog, doing lovely walks. We've got lovely walks around near us.
And having grandchildren probably helps, does it? As in...
No. Yeah, it does. You come away with bad backs and sore arms, and it does. And you've got to lead by example to them.
Yeah.
And that's why I never ever told Ryan or Zoe, my daughter, about my issues, because to them, their dad was the kingpin who was strong and tough. And
well, I think that was up until relatively.
Yeah, recently. I'd say actually now. Now the thought, definitely in the industry and everywhere with mental health, is to be really open about it and share about it. Like, what sort of advice would you give to someone now, especially in the construction industry, I think, suffering?
Well, my strength was my wife. She was there for me, supportive for me, listened to me. And I think everybody should open up, talk to their friends, be honest with them, tell them how you feel. You have lots of tears over it.
Yeah.
But the more people that you can talk to, the more people you find that are struggling as well.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't tell people that they got problems. When I did sometimes try and open up to people would look at me and laugh and go, what, you, Bernie? No way.
Yeah.
But you'll be surprised, the most happiest people in the world can have this.
No, I've seen it myself. Yeah. I think we all know people, don't we, who outwardly seem fine. So it just goes to show, doesn't it? You really cannot tell what's going on in people's
heads.
One
of the things I do remember was someone took their life who was I think it might have even been Robbie Williams. And my daughter said to me, anyone that takes their life is pretty selfish, Dad. Do you agree with me? And she didn't know at that time that I had struggled.
Yeah.
But she was saying that how can they leave people in this world that have to carry this on by losing their loved one for the rest of their life. Commercial break.
So ordinarily, this would be the time where we have a word from our esteemed sponsors, but seeing as we're being sponsored by Chime Software and Wren Construction, there's no need to do that. So thank you to our sponsors.
Ourselves.
And that's the end of the sponsorship line.
The doctor said, get back to work. How did you find out about George Jackson and wanting to buy it? And
A friend of mine who was in the industry, had a fibrous business, rang me up to say, you know, come and look at this business. It's was known then as a big company called Clark & Fenn.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted now to come back with bigger and bigger ideas.
All right.
And my big ideas was you put a fibrous business in with a ceiling contractor, right, and petitioner, the world's your oyster.
And so you would do the whole wall, ceiling, and the decorative columns.
Getting onto shopping centres.
Yeah.
I wanted to come back and see that the people that was in Advanced Interiors still were just.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them see me again, achieve, and go past them at the level they were at.
Right.
And I was, you know, I really wanted to
stick it out.
So we went down and we went to this office down in Mitcham. Dusty old thing, been there for years, and there was things in there that I just did not know what it was, but it was amazing. They had 17,000 pear wood apple reverse moulds. So basically,
right,
if you look at a piece of wood, it means it's carved out. God knows who carved them out then, and it literally the pears would be hanging off the edge, and that's how they made their moulds.
Right,
it was a slow old product. I realised if I could take these, put it into the moulds, and then we then got an interview for Westfield Shopping Centre in Stratford,
right,
which would have been the
big gig.
Exciting times. And we spent probably 2 months doing a mock-up, and all the people come over from Australia and loved it. We naturally thought, this is
we're
it.
In
this
here,
is
yeah.
the baby.
This is it.
And then they sort of told us the programme, and we said, well, no one in this country
no
can
chance.
Make these panels in fibrous in this little time. So then they got another company in who did metalwork,
right,
who made the panels a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So I realised that was my real kick.
You've been outdone by technology to some extent.
So I then put them back into the heritage, right, which has all been dusty and never been used for so long. And this, they did work on the Titanic.
Right. They, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, they did work on the Titanic. They had airplanes, so when the Germans flew over, they used to look down and see more planes, which was made of plaster. But they
They did the whole mock-up plane business.
And they got all these things in the warrants from the Queen's Hill and all this. Yeah, it was amazing. Wow. Great Friar Windsor Castle. It was a wow, but I knew nothing about it. And we had the business for 3 years. And why we were there for 3 years, we actually won the Heritage Award twice, which is a big thing, you know, big silver sort of plasterers award.
Yeah.
And then it was at a time again, Roger, where I felt I had to sell it.
Right.
And the reason I had to sell it was I was more proud of it than making money.
Right. So maybe a vanity project.
You know, I wanted to move on. I could see CW just sitting there still and you know, waiting.
You wanted to dive in.
And I wanted to put volume and quick money into it. And to me, why you can do well in dry lining is because you can have heaps and heaps of plasterboard putting up in a day.
So what did you do? You then sold...
I sold George Jackson's.
George Jackson's.
I just really wanted to get back into something I really know.
Yeah.
But as I've sort of always said to my brother, I'm only in it to get me through a few years, and then it's over to you.
By this point, you'd made up with each other, had you?
We never make up, but we love each other.
Oh.
When we set up this new business, it was really strange because he just did what he wanted to do. He went and got his clients, I got my clients, and then we sat down at the end of the month and just sort of added the money up.
So what year would this have been? This would have been, what, about 2013 or something like that?
2011.
Yeah.
about okay, that, two okay, versions. Yeah. Yeah. So it got slowly, but it was lovely because some of the clients that I had, I went back to and they opened the doors up to me again.
So that would be the likes of RG, like
John Casey, lovely Casey man. And that lot. Not everyone agree with that, but to me, he was a...
Well, no, well, funnily enough, when I set Ren up, we were chasing a bit of the same work at one point in time. So I remember chatting away with you and...
He got his pounds worth, but he was a good man.
I was on my year out at RG's and we were doing Sainsbury's and Apsley. And we went out with the ground workers. It was Carey's. It was about five of them. Went down to everyone went to the pub for lunch, and obviously everyone went back to work. I was like, no, I'll stay with the guys. I'll stay. About eight pints of Stella later.
Oh God!
Honestly, right. I crawled up the stairs to the psych cabin, burst into Casey's room, and said, "Come on, mate, let's go out. I'll find you a bird."
Jesus.
And then he loved me from then on. To be fair, he was like, oh,
"You're one of the lucky ones to get him out."
Yeah, we all know Johnny. Drinking with Johnny quite a lot. But that was.
If you wanted to find it, maybe in the site office.
So you and your brother Mick ran CW for a few years. And
yeah, we ran CW and I was constantly thinking the end is near.
How did you sell it? Did you sell it to your brother?
Yeah, it just went, we basically sat down and come up with a number. Hopefully when he listens to this, he'll say, I sold it cheap. I know I did. But I want
I'm
him.
Sure that'll be another roll around in the car park.
So
agree to disagree on that.
So I just want him now to move it within 8 years, do the same.
I know Rog last week was talking about his father-in-law Mike has been a huge role model and an important figure when you're alone and when you need to ask those difficult questions. Have you had someone
back in the early days? We had a person that I was asked to meet over at Dun & Bradstreet in High Wycombe. It was a new job on the A40. And I was told, if you can take a few of your men, I think they asked for about eight men, to go a meat meal, 8 o'clock. On the way home, I told my men, we're up early. I want your pouches on, I want your pencils sharpened. Right. I want everything looking right tomorrow. And when we get out of that van, we get out like we've had an early night. Yeah. I'll never forget that. And we all sort of, you know, in them days you used to carry like 20 in the van. And we opened up the doors and he was waiting for us. And we set an impression. We had the drawings out. People were putting the water levels or laser lines around whatever you needed to do. And he actually went back and said to his people in his office, and it was a big, you know, SAS or a big company there.
It was SAS with it.
Yeah, Special Acoustic Services, yeah.
Yeah.
Went back and said, wow, I think we've met a good gang and someone that we need.
Yeah.
So that impression did start. And we ended up taking Dun & Bradstreet right to the end, probably building ourselves up to 40 men.
Right.
He trusted me.
Just on that job?
Yeah. And then we had other jobs around.
Yeah.
We decided to go up into London. He used to call me in and open the drawings up, you know, discuss with me, could we do it? He was a good team member. I loved him. I just used to walk into his office and just chat to him.
The fact.
Yeah, and sometimes I told him that I don't think we're going to get this job done. Don't worry, he says, we can push it back two more days. He used to talk to me and help me through them times.
So do you think things have changed in the industry there? I mean, you've obviously been, because we spoke to Mike the other day, he's 50 years, you're 40 years or what have you then.
We did the most silliest of things when I was a plumber.
Yeah.
We used to put hemp on each other's shoulders and light fire to it. I've fallen off a 30-foot scaffold that one of my friends said took the outriggers off.
Right.
Thought it'd be very funny, and I ended up in hospital for 2 days.
Bloody hell, yeah.
But one of my stories I always tell people is when we was working in Hackney, I think it was my second, third year of being an apprentice, and we was all the apprentices used to be really good on what we called a putty gun.
Yeah, what is a putty gun?
Putty gun's about a 3-foot length of copper pipe,
right?
And you get a bit of plumber's mate, roll it up, nice and tight, and literally blow it like a
bomb. Oh, I see, like a dart.
Yeah,
you know, like an Amazonian.
We would have a sparrow off a telephone.
No, really?
From 40 foot away, long way away. And one day we had a new challenge, and across the road was this totter's yard,
right.
and which we all call Steptown's Son now.
Yeah.
And they were a couple of old boys, and every day they sort of put their horse and cart outside and go in and do whatever they want to do and unload. So we decided to try and hit this horse. The horse was a couple of times getting hit, but it wasn't powerful enough to make him sort of run. So I came up with this raw plug, and it was fitted nicely, and I blew it. Well, it hit this horse, and this horse literally galloped up the road, horse and cart, literally up the road through Hackney High Street.
Oh, brilliant.
We are literally giggling out. You know, they've come running out like, what's going on? But, you know, Roger, imagine that these days. You know, the police wouldn't have been involved.
Yeah.
The site manager would have not told us not to come back. They actually knew it was us.
Yeah.
The next day I walked to work, and the old boy, he must have been 80 at the time, the old boy, and he got his walking stick out and he put it to his mouth.
Really? And blow it as if to say, I know exactly where you're up to.
Yeah. So, and there we are today.
Okay, Bernie, we're going to do some quick final questions. I'm going to ask you a question and just answer me in one line. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Probably from my wife. Always been my backbone. Work hard, play hard.
Like it.
And top tip for someone coming into the industry now?
Don't bother.
Come on. Come in.
And if you could bring one thing to a desert island, what would it be?
Swiss Army knife.
Well, Bernie, thanks so much.
No, thanks, man. I mean, how did you find that?
Loved it.
Bernie, thank you so much for coming in. I knew a lot about where you've come from and where you've got to, but there's loads I learned today, and I think the listeners, people listening, will take a load from that and get inspired by someone who worked hard and got the benefit of it. Yeah. But also, it was good to hear that it's not all sunshine and unicorns, and that, you know, you got affected by some of it and you dealt with it, and we're, you know, so happy that you're back smiling and making
Thank
us
you
laugh.
Both for having me on.
Thanks so much, Bernie.
Cheers, Bernie.
Thanks, mate.
Ta.
Wow, that was great, wasn't it, Rog?
Wasn't it? Yeah.
So good having him in and sharing all his stories.
Yeah, he's always got a lot to say, Bernie, and you know, it was unusual, really, wasn't it, to hear the other side to it, maybe?
Yeah, totally. I think you don't come across that so often in construction, and I think the fact that he opened up so honestly to us.
Construction is, it's going through a stage of, like the whole world is, I suppose, of acknowledging people's mental health, and I think in construction particularly, I think I've always felt that, you know, it's quite susceptible to it. People can be dropped into roles that they're not necessarily ready for. I don't think that sometimes the training's there. I remember I told you this anecdote before about a guy that worked with us, and he'd been in Iraq and Afghanistan fighting, and he did a job with us. Lovely guy. And he did a job with us in Canary Wharf. It was a sort of fit out contract. And I remember him saying to me, he was covered from head to toe in sort of plasterboard dust. and he looked at me and said, honestly, this is way more stressful than going to war. So I think, you know,
it's crazy. Yeah.
And you saw it.
Yeah. I mean, I had it in very small dose, but when you made me project manage in the Olympics when we were there, and I remember calling you up and just crying and being like, Rog, I can't do this. I'm finding it so stressful. And, you know, I've had lots of stress.
We had a very stressful war-torn.
And
I think often people don't know what's expected of them. You know, he's been successful. He's got all the trappings in life that you think are really important and that you really strive to get, and yet still.
Oh, totally. People from the outside would think he's got everything.
Yeah, because he was always a very bubbly guy. You would never have thought. And so, I think we're both grateful, aren't we?
Yeah, it was great.
He shared that story with us and to our listeners, who I think will get a lot from it. So, anyway, on a lighter note, Bells.
Yep. What are you up to tonight?
On my way home, I think I'm going to pop into my job and see how they got on. Make sure they haven't all scarpered early. Check it out. Make sure everything's going okay. What about you?
I mean, I'm watching Flight Attendant at the moment. Have you watched that?
No.
Now TV. I don't think you've got Now TV.
I tend to stick to Netflix, Prime, and Disney.
Oh, okay.
And what am I watching at the moment? The Terror. Have you seen that? It's like based on an Arctic adventure from 1850. It's really good. We watched two episodes last night.
You love a historical.
Yeah, no, that's our thing.
I feel like you're always after the historical dramas.
We love a
drama.
Yeah. A period drama, that's the word. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe.
And we'll be back next week, same time.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye now. Bye.